this is your Polycast for Tuesday, March 24th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the House passes changes to the minimum wage, Governor Dayton sides with U.S. Steel on pollution standards, and Minneapolis schools are going to cut administrative staff. The Minnesota House has passed legislation that allows employers to pay tipped workers a lower minimum wage. Lawmakers voted 78 to 55 last night to modify the minimum wage law enacted last year. The measure lets restaurants pay servers at the current $8 hourly rate when scheduled increases kick in if their wages and tips exceed $12 an hour. DFL Governor Mark Dayton opposes the bill. He says he's not interested in changing the minimum wage law.
I think it's one of the best things Minnesota's done. It puts money in the pockets of those consumers all over the state who then take that money and go to local stores and buy the necessities of life. So it's good for our economy. It's good for family policy, and I don't see any reason to tamper with it.
DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach said it's unlikely the Senate will take up the proposal. Governor Dayton is siding with U.S. Steel in a battle over water pollution standards. In an interview with NPR News yesterday, Dayton said the existing sulfate standard aimed at protecting wild rice is out of date, and pushing it could be catastrophic for northeastern Minnesota. Groups concerned about the environment strongly disagree. Tom Scheck has more.
Governor Dayton's comments are the strongest he's made about the long-running debate over U.S. Steel's Minntac plant in Mountain Iron. The debate is over the amount of sulfate discharged from the plant. The state's current clean water standard says U.S. Steel and other companies should not release more than 10 milligrams of sulfate per liter of water. Any more than that could threaten lakes where wild rice grows. Company lobbyists and Iron Range legislators say the standard is too high and have been lobbying for looser standards. Now, Dayton is joining that group.
Some people will say, well, you know, you're going to abandon the standard. Well, but the standard is obsolete and it's not validated by current science and information, then to stick with it and, you know, close down an industry is really ill-advised.
Dayton says the sulfate standard is outdated and has rarely been enforced since it was first established in 1973. The Minntac plant was facing the new standard as it renewed a decades-old permit, something U.S. Steel said would cost hundreds of millions of dollars in upgrades. Dayton cited a global slowdown in the steel industry as a factor in his decision. He said the sulfate standard is complex and doesn't guarantee that wild rice will thrive.
If you have a possibly low standard that doesn't correlate with the problem you're trying to solve anyway, then you put the whole industry out of business. We don't even know if that's going to improve wild rice conditions. It certainly isn't going to, it's going to be catastrophic for life up in northeastern Minnesota.
A spokeswoman for U.S. Steel issued a statement saying the company thinks the standard should be based on sound science and that it looks forward to working with Dayton and other stakeholders. DFL Representative Carly Moline of Hibbing says she's pleased with Dayton's comments because she thinks the science behind the sulfate standard is outdated. Moline said making the standard more realistic would prevent taconite businesses on the Iron Range from spending hundreds of millions of dollars to update their facilities.
We know that the industry just can't afford to make that sort of investment on the Iron Range. And obviously there are thousands of jobs, depending on the taconite industry in northeastern Minnesota. So it's really important to us that the regulations make sense and we put a brake on this 10 standard and start looking at what the new scientific standard would be.
Dayton's comments seem to contradict the approach up until now by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Last month, agency scientists said its draft permits for the Minntac plant would require U.S. Steel to meet the existing sulfate standard. But then, the agency said it would delay the permit to work on the wild rice standard. Also last month, agency officials warned lawmakers that efforts to undermine the water pollution standards could prompt the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to take control of state water regulations. When asked about Dayton's comments, a spokesman for the MPCA said the agency will release its new wild rice recommendations this week. He wouldn't comment on U.S. Steel's permit because it will be revised after the new standards are established. Environmental groups are not pleased.
We don't agree that it's out of date. The science has been updated very recently. And the science is strong, and it's been peer-reviewed by independent scientists.
Catherine Hoffman is an attorney with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. She said she hasn't seen any science that contradicts the current sulfate standard.
If the governor is saying that there is some other scientific basis or some other studies that we haven't seen or these peer reviewers haven't seen, then we'd like to know more about that. But we believe that the sulfate standard, that all water quality standards are based in science, and they can't be changed without a scientific basis.
Hoffman also said she's worried state regulators and the legislature may be preparing to ease the state's environmental standards, just as the debate over copper-nickel mining in Minnesota is starting to get serious. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
As we mentioned yesterday, Republicans at the Capitol have proposed a transportation funding proposal they say would spend $7 billion over 10 years on roads and bridges without raising taxes. The approach contrasts sharply with Governor Dayton and Senate Democrats, who are pushing plans that rely on a wholesale gas tax and a metro sales tax increase. Tim Pugmire has the story.
Republicans are calling their latest plan the Road and Bridge Act of 2015. The funding package spends $228 million from the budget surplus and borrows more than $2 billion using trunk highway bonds and general obligation bonds over 10 years. It requires the Minnesota Department of Transportation to come up with $1.2 billion through efficiencies and taps existing state sales tax revenue from auto parts, car rentals, and leases. During a news conference, House Transportation Chair Tim Kelly of Red Wing said the Republican plan would move the sales tax revenue into a new dedicated transportation stability fund.
This is more of a future-oriented approach that says now going forward we do have stability. We do have stability in the auto parts tax, in the lease tax, in the rental tax, that now the older antiquated system of a gas tax is just that. We can leave that behind, and now we have a source of income that will be responsive to these needs over the next 10 years.
Kelly said the plan would capture $300 million in existing general fund revenue over the next 2 years. The 10-year estimate is $3 billion. House Speaker Kurt Dowd of Crown would not say which areas of the budget would have to absorb those shifts. He noted that the soon-to-be-released House budget outline would show how things fit together.
The bottom line is there are plenty of resources available to fund this and quite a few other priorities and still respect Minnesota taxpayers. So we're going to show how to do that.
DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach of Cook said constitutionally dedicated funding like the gas tax is a better approach for transportation. Bach said the House Republican proposal of using general fund revenue could too easily be undone by the next legislature.
There's just no guarantee that roads and public infrastructure are going to continue to be a priority when you've put them into the mix of having to compete with everything else in the state budget, like early childhood and K-12 and higher ed and healthcare and nursing homes. I think it's unlikely that transportation competes in that environment in the next budget cycle.
But Republicans stressed repeatedly that Minnesotans don't want to pay more at the pump in taxes. In response to the GOP plan, Governor Dayton acknowledged the public's resistance to a higher gas tax, but he questioned whether the public fully appreciates the state's transportation needs.
You know, I don't know when people are going to come to realizing that this is a problem that's not going to go away. It's only going to get worse. And the only people who are going to be able to do anything about it, fix it, are ourselves. And whenever that realization sinks in is when we'll move on it.
Dayton said he was glad to see House Republicans release their plan because there's now something to talk about. Dayton, who wants to spend more than $10 billion on transportation over the next decade, also noted the divide that must be bridged.
Well, they're not interested in gas tax or increase. We're not interested in borrowing from now and from our future, but we'll have to come up with something or we'll have nothing.
Transit takes a back seat in the Republican plan. It would require the Metropolitan Council to take over the funding of transit operations in the Twin Cities. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
160 people working at the Minneapolis School District will be out of a job at the end of June. The district handed out layoff notices to about a quarter of the administrative workers at its headquarters yesterday. District officials expect to save millions of dollars with the move and plan on passing the money to individual schools. Tim Post has the story.
The layoffs include a mix of Minneapolis school employees from all departments, part-time and full-time, and amount to the equivalent of about 120 full-time jobs.
Anytime when you reduce this many people is a difficult decision.
That's interim Minneapolis Schools Superintendent Michael Gore. He signaled layoffs were coming when he took over in February. Back then, he called it right-sizing district headquarters. Some jobs will disappear as departments with similar functions are combined. The Transportation Call Center and the Emergency Management Division will merge. Planning and accountability will fold into the Research and Development Office. And certain administrative work done at district headquarters will move to schools. Gore says some of the changes cut out an unnecessary layer that handled funding for school nurses, for example, before shifting to schools.
So why not just give directly to school? Let the schools manage those resources.
The layoffs will save the district $11.6 million next fiscal year, money that Gore says will go to schools so they can hire more teachers and reduce kindergarten through third grade class sizes. He says some schools may also use the money to tack on another period to their day.
All high schools and all middle schools will be able to add additional instructional time starting next year.
Gore says laid-off employees with teaching licenses will be encouraged to apply for teaching positions at schools. He expects the district to hire 350 new teachers by fall. The Minneapolis Teachers Union did not respond to an interview request for this story. Tim Post, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.